Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 29. Dave, it's Wednesday. That means Mike Tomlin's had his press conference. We're up to date on the injuries. Why don't you fill us in on the latest news?
Yeah, he did. And, you know, I don't know what it is about after wins sometimes. He seems to be a little grumpier sometimes or a little less forthcoming, I should say. Maybe I'm reading too much into it after wins. But anyway, he did cover injuries going forward and said that Mawaldi Moore has that high ankle sprain. I'm not sure if that's the first time he used the term high ankle or not. Maybe he did in the past. And that he continues to work his way back from that. You know, it really sounds like he might be down again, you know, kind of reading him between the lines. He called him questionable. Marquise Pouncey, you know, he left for about six or seven plays against the Titans last week. Ended up being a right knee contusion, and he should be fine. Tomlin noted he'll probably be limited in the early portion of the practices starting today, so we'll see what the injury report later this afternoon says. Jason Worlds in that quad continues to work his way back, and really Mike Tomlin didn't sound too optimistic about that. And, boy, what a golden opportunity Worlds, you know, seems to be down at all the wrong times, whether it be a hamstring or quad or what. But it doesn't sound like he's going to be a go this week. It also sounds like Marcus Gilbert, you know, he's deemed questionable with that shoulder injury he re-injured against the Titans. You know, he's termed questionable, Thomas said. Of course, Jonathan Scott will start at right tackle if Gilbert can't play. I tweeted Gilbert yesterday, you know, kind of say, hey, bud, what's up with the shoulder? And, you know, all he really said, you know, his first day of treatment went fine and all like that. So really no clarity there. I would kind of expect they would go with Jonathan Scott this week at right tackle, but we've got a long way to go. Casey Hampton, no real clarity on his shoulder injury other than termed as questionable right shoulder injury. Reading in between the lines after Chris Hope talked the other day after the game kind of made it seem like they're preparing to be without Casey for maybe at least another game or not. So we'll see what the injury report tells us on that. Chris Kimoata with that knee, I wrote about that a little while ago before even the last week's injury report came out, that I'm willing to bet he's down a couple weeks according to reports, and I'm willing to bet he's down again. So that would mean Ligurski will start again. Bless you.
Thank you.
That would mean Ligurski start at left guard again and Ramon Foster at right guard. Aaron Smith, it doesn't look like he's going to play again with that sprained foot. And, of course, James Harrison will be out with the eye injury. Cortez Allen looks to be battling back from that ankle injury. He could be back this week. Rashard Mendenhall and Ben Roethlisberger were mentioned as progressing from their injuries. I would expect Mendenhall dresses and plays this week.
Yeah, I think that's right on Mendenhall. I think you hit them all right on the head. I'd be surprised if Kimo goes. Obviously, Aaron Smith's not going to go. I think the guys you'll see go are Mendenhall and Cortez Allen, and I think everybody else I would be a little surprised and call Gilbert to coin toss, see what happens today with practice. Dave, you know, you and I talked about this a little bit yesterday, and I've talked about it when I was hosting Stan's show some this week. There, you know, the perception is now pretty clearly that Bryant McFadden has lost his starting job, and not only that, he's not the first guy in the rotation for nickelback. And Tomlin addressed this in the press conference and said, you know, we're happy with the guys and the job they're doing. We're not looking to make a change. McFadden's working his way back in the rotation. We saw the Steelers play their best game of the year on Sunday without a lot of their, you know, name starters. No question, Aaron Smith, Casey Hampton, Rashard Mendenhall, Chris Kimoatu. And the phrase that we used was, you know, the guys who didn't play, it would be good if they played better. If we're thinking about where the Steelers are going to be kind of over the next 6 weeks, is it realistic to think that maybe Ziggy Hood is going to be the starting left end here as the Steelers get into the meat of their season? And how would you expect the offensive line to be set up maybe two or three weeks from now if everybody were healthy?
Well, as far as Aaron Smith goes, I mean, without a doubt, Ziggy Hood, you know, we noted, I think we talked about this on either on your show yesterday. Boy, that guy just plays so much better on the left side as opposed to the right side. He's done good getting pressure on the quarterback too. I think he had eight or nine pressures this past week. At first glance there, that were key. He does a good job backside stopping the run when teams are trying to stretch it out to the left side. And I think it's totally plausible now that Aaron Smith has lost his starting role. He's always an injury concern. He wasn't absolutely setting the world on fire before he went down with that foot injury as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think Ziggy is your guy. I don't think you, as Tomlin put it yesterday, I don't think you fix that which is not broken. And, I definitely see that. Now, as far as the offensive line going forward, I think Doug Legursky is a much better left guard than he is a right guard. A, because of his short area quickness, being able to get to that right side on those counter plays and all. Now, there's nothing wrong with one of Kemo's bright spots too is his ability to pull. And I think they're both about equal as far as pass protection as well. I think both of them are much better run blockers than they are pass blockers. So, I think it all depends on the shape of Kemo Otto's knee. I think Ramon Foster is your guy now at right guard. I don't see how you can back away from that right now. I think he just does, a little bit when you look at his entire body of work. I think he just gives you more than Legursky would on that right side there. So, a few weeks down the road, when Gilbert comes back and all, I think you're going to see Starks. And I mean, let's put a question mark in the left guard spot because I think they would rather have a healthy Kemo Otto in there over Legursky. Then, of course, Pouncey at center, Foster at right guard, and Marcus Gilbert, the rookie, at right tackle.
Yeah, I generally think that's how it's going to end up as well. And it'll be interesting to see. I think one of the things, one of the things I think is important to understand is even though the Steelers are a veteran team and we expect great things out of them right out of training camp, not a lot of new faces, no new coordinators. They understand the system. Football teams are, the goal is to improve over the course of the year. And the Steelers certainly have a room for improvement. You definitely would have liked them to play better coming out of the chute. But one of the things we've seen here is we saw some improvement Sunday, and we are going to see these new guys come in and these new faces get more playing time, improve. And now if the Steelers if they lay an egg here in either of the next 2 weeks, then I think, for the first time of the season, I'll be concerned not so much about, where they are in the standings right now, but whether they're actually a good football team, because good football teams got to go out and take care of business these next 2 weeks. They got to beat the Jaguars, and I think they should beat this team handily. And then, you're going to have to win some games on the road. But it is, this could be a team over the course of the year, this 16-game schedule, where they could finish 10-6 or 11-5 and not beat a good football team. I mean, literally, they could, if they lose three games the rest of the way and they lose to New England at home, Baltimore at home, and to San Francisco on the road, they'll finish 11-5. And, I think you can comfortably say they didn't beat a good team.
Yeah, and that will be the talk at that time, heading into the playoffs, because, of course, if they lose to Baltimore twice this year, you would have to think that Baltimore's not going to slip up that much. So you would think that the Steelers would be, in the running for a wild card at 11-5. And if they head into the playoffs at that situation and indeed did not beat the Ravens twice, which they evidently wouldn't if they lost this next game. If they lost, which they did to the Texans, and if they lost to the Patriots, and you threw out, what was the other loss that you hypothetically threw out there to the 49ers?
San Francisco on the road.
Yeah, and I mean, that's going to be the talk. Hey, this team is 11-5, but is it a real 11-5? They haven't beaten anybody on their schedule. They won the games that were supposed to win. So, yeah, that would definitely be some concern heading into the playoffs and playing. You going back around again. You have to think New England's going to be in there in the tournament, as Mike Tomlin likes to say. Baltimore, of course, will be in there. Houston's going to be in there. And Lord knows what's going to come out of the West there. But, I think it's a concern. I think you hit it on the head. These next two games against, let's face it, man, the Jaguars are not a good team. Arizona is not a good team right now. These are two teams that you've got to really, you should destroy. And if you don't, if you're in close games and maybe pull them out late or don't have a good showing, then, yeah, even though you win those games, maybe there is some concern heading into the Ravens and Patriots game. But, you know, they've had a lot of injuries. You mentioned, not having all the preseason work due to the lockout and all. I think they're just sort of now kind of finding an identity of what they really are. It'll be interesting to see if they continue this. This game plan as far as offense with the quick passes and trying to establish the run and whatnot at all cost, because it really, really opened up a lot of things for the offense against a fairly good Tennessee defense. You know, let's give them a little bit of credit there. So, I'm with you as far as that. They've got to take care of these next two teams handily, against Jacksonville and Arizona.
Yep. The Ravens and the Browns have the week off. The Bengals get a win against Jacksonville. The division, I think we take for granted the fact the Steelers are going to win four games against Cleveland and Cincinnati. And, that should be the case. But, kudos to both those teams for maybe playing a little better football than people anticipated, particularly the Bengals with Andy Dalton, the quarterback. It's interesting that we don't get to see either of those teams until very late in the season. It's a little bit odd. We will have played Baltimore twice, and we won't have seen either the Bengals or the Browns. They get a chance to get better too, and we'll see how injuries impact things along the way. But, the big stories in the league right now, the Eagles are the biggest story in the league with their semi-complete collapse here, and they got to be kind of chewing their fingernails a little bit on having Michael Vick a $100 million contract for the next X number of years. That looks a little absurd at this point in time. And you have to question the thought process there. A guy who played, 12 games last year, and certainly he's a dynamic player, but he's 31 years old, and he's coming off not playing for a couple of years. So, yeah, that means he has young legs and maybe didn't get hit as much, but he's a guy who is susceptible to getting hit a lot the way he plays. You have the Tigers, the Lions and the Bills on the good side, and the Falcons and the Jets also on the bad side. I mean, when you look at the league and where we are and how things are going, what are kind of the stories that are jumping out?
I think the Eagles, meltdown is pretty huge. They were called the dream team. Went out and got a couple of free agents there, and have done, utterly total collapse. I think Andy Reid's lost that team. I would be surprised right now if they crawl back from this and make the playoffs. You hit well. The Bengals are playing, although the schedule's kind of set up nice for them at the beginning of the year. But, yeah, they've done it with a rookie quarterback, and, they're winning games, and that's all that matters in a division. I think the Browns, and we knew the Browns would probably be a little bit better team despite the coaching change and all heading forward into this season. So, I don't know. I tell you, based on my spread picks alone from week to week, I don't have a good grasp on what's going on from week to week in the NFL, and I think the lockout has a lot to do with it. I think teams can't, there's a lot of middle of the road teams that you just don't know what you're going to get out of week to week. And I guess you could call it parity, but it is what it is. And it's hard to grasp on anything that's going on. I think the NFC is a lot easier to judge. You've got your powerhouses in the Packers and the Saints who are going to find a way to win games. Look at the Packers this week. Damn, they lost, were without the damn tackles. They went through a short stretch of the game there where it looked like Aaron Rodgers was becoming a Ben Roethlisberger in the pocket, but they all of a sudden got better there in game. I don't know what type of adjustments they made in game, but Aaron Rodgers ended up taking that game over there. So, the AFC, some of these spots are going to be up for grabs here outside of the obvious of the New England and the Baltimore, spots in the playoffs.
Yep, and it's interesting. Mike Tomlin can put whipped cream on anything because in that press conference, he went through his injuries, and then he spent, he spent a good 10 minutes going over the Jags personnel, and as he does every Tuesday, just lauding the amount of talent on that team and Maurice Jones-Drew and whatever. And it's almost comical. I mean, he's talking about their nickelback for a good Drew Coleman from the Jets for a good couple minutes about how they're going to have to scheme around the Jags nickelback. God bless them.
Yeah, I I guess you just, you know, it runs into just not giving them any bulletin board material. Tomlin's, you know, we've seen this for quite a while now, you know, and you put it best, putting whipped cream on anything. And but, I mean, let's face it, I talked to Vito Stellino, which we got that interview coming up here shortly, Jags beat writer. A lot of people might remember the name Old School because he used to write locally for Pittsburgh and cover the Steelers beat for the Post-Gazette and all.
For the press, I think, even back
Yeah, for the Pittsburgh press as well. So, you know, I was able to pull some info out of Vito. You got to understand, if you'd known Vito and seen some of his interviews over the years and all like that, you know, sometimes you got to pull information out of them and all, but we got some good info coming out of him. But basically, I mean, that Jags team's in trouble, and, you know, their defense has played fairly well, you know, considering, but on offense, it's just been ugly, and it's because of the rookie quarterback in there, you know, trying to make, they haven't made plays when they needed to make plays, and the offense goes three and out, and they just can't get a rhythm there. So, yeah, the Jaguars are just not a good team, but to hear Mike Tomlin talk about them, you'd think they're vying for the AFC South division right now.
Yep. And, yeah, I mean, when you know, he did make the point, and it's the right point. You know, they get rid of David Girard at the beginning of the season. They played McCown. They go to Gabbert. I haven't seen any film with Gabbert. Have you? I don't even know how he's looked in his couple games. I mean, he's obviously kept them in games, and they rely on Jones-Drew. But you know, this is the thing. Dick LeBeau's defense should have a field day with this kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, and I asked Vito about that too. You know, about the Steelers playing a lot of that dime this week, and you know, I would expect to see more of that this week, especially against a young quarterback. Can you imagine Troy Polamalu down in the box all day against you, and you only have one game worth of film recently of them playing? You know, that type dime situation there with the six defensive backs in there, they have got to be pulling out their hair. So I think it's run the ball. They have to run the ball if they're going to do anything against the Steelers, and kind of hope for a big play every now and again, because if Jones-Drew is shut down like they shut down Chris Johnson this past week, they don't have a prayer. If you get that kid in third and long, and if Dick LeBeau throws the exotic blitzes at him early on in this game, that kid could very well get killed in this game.
Exactly, and so it'll be interesting to see how they max protect, and we'll talk more about the game itself on Friday and get into the Jaguars and how they play and do some of that stuff. But yeah, and so, you know, if you do max protect, obviously, if you're scheming against the Steelers defense that way, that takes away some things, and you know, we would expect to see a heavy dose of Jones-Drew early in the game. Again, it's a situation where if the Steelers get off to a start like they did on Sunday against the Titans, this game will get ugly for Jacksonville, because they don't have a veteran quarterback and a passing game to turn to. And even without Kenny Britt, you know, the Titans have some weapons that they can go to, and obviously the threat of CJ at any point in time is a little different, because you know, the Steelers will load the box against Jones-Drew, and they'll be bringing heat on Gabbert, and it's, you know, again, it's a game where the line's 12.5. It's like the Seattle game. I just can't see this one being close.
Yeah, I can't either. And we'll break it down more in depth. I'm going to rewatch the game against the Bengals here, which evidently, you know, I've tried to go through the first quarter or so on it. It's like watching, oh man, it's time you're never going to get back from your life again. And we'll break that down further. But yeah, let's recap a couple things maybe that you've seen through the game a couple times this past week with the Titans. Mark Cabali has a great article up on the Trib side blog on some of the things that he saw. There's a lot of things. I think Ed Bouchette even mentioned in a tweet or a post yesterday about how he really wasn't overly impressed with the running game.
Yeah, so, I thought that was an interesting piece, and I think for those who didn't see it, Ed really talked about, if you throw out the 76-yard run, and you throw out the two runs, the reverses or the end arounds by Antonio Brown and who had the other one? Which one?
Wallace, wasn't it?
Mike Wallace, right? A 10 and an 8-yard run. You basically had guys running for a 2.5-yard average or something like that on a fair number of carries. And I guess that was the point that I was trying to make when we talked about it yesterday and a little bit on Monday, is, you know, when Isaac Redman put up 15 carries for 49 yards, I think everybody likes the fact that he sees a hole and hits it. He's aggressive to the line of scrimmage, and that's a good thing. But And also, you know, look, he's a big guy. He definitely dragged some runners there. So this is not an indictment of Isaac Redman. But, you know, the stats were not all that great. And inside the red zone, the Steelers were ineffective at running the ball at all. And they really went to the pass. And Ed points out that, you know, on the first touchdown, they go to Heath after running the ball once. On the second touchdown, they went play action on first down and got Hines for the touchdown. They weren't able to run the ball effectively in the red zone. And, you know, basically didn't try to do it. But the times they did, they weren't so effective. I'm generally in agreement. And when the offense puts up that kind of yardage offensively, it's not an indictment of the run game. It's just, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves that, you know, all the problems were solved, you know, on Sunday.
I think, you know, we were a threat to run. It had to be respected, and that's what set up that play action. If you look at the Steelers through the first three quarters and the running backs only, and you take away, everybody likes to take away that Jonathan Dwyer run, even though that's part of the game and that's what you work for, to try to break one of those like that. You know, I hate discounting that, but yep. but for shits and giggles, I did. You know, if you look at the running backs, both Redman and Dwyer, through three quarters, they had 21 carries for 74 yards. When you take away that 76-yard run by Dwyer, that's a 3.5, you know, hair over 3.5 average, which is not bad. You know, it's not great, but hell, if you gain 3.5 yards, you know, a carry every time you touch the ball, you're gonna be in the end zone. So,
yep.
You know, but on the flip side, Redmond's not the savior that everybody's making him out to be, because there were not that many huge, you know, creases or running lanes there. Redman did a lot out of nothing sometimes, so that's definitely a credit to him. He does hit the hole a lot harder, in my opinion, and faster than Mendenhall does. But it doesn't. I mean, let's look at that run by Dwyer too. If that same hole opens up for Mendenhall is probably in the end zone. Okay. And without a doubt, I think he gets past the safety, Babineau, there as well. So, you know, let's face it, the running backs had a good game. I thought Dwyer, one thing I wanted to make sure I hit on, going back and looking at the film of Dwyer without the football in that game. Oh boy, what a night and day difference. There's a blitz pickup, and I think it was the second to the last series that the Steelers had the ball. Corner comes off the edge, and both, I think it was Dwyer and Miller are lined up in the backfield on that. Miller picks up one of the ends, and Dwyer has to come from the other side of the formation to recognize the blitz and pick up the blitzer. And boy, he does. He lowers him and puts him down. And that's a testament to the things that Tomlin talked about in his press conference yesterday, about Dwyer showing the things without the football. And that's what we've said all along, David, is, you know, once he starts showing things that he can do without the football, then he's going to start getting a helmet. And I think you know, add in his special teams play this past week, you know, he's right there on the cusp now, and he's able to take over, you know, with a helmet, should a Mawaldi Moore be down. But, you know, let's not throw Mendenhall out with the bathwater just yet, you know, because let's face it, this guy has rushed for some tremendous yardage over the last couple of seasons. He can bust them on the outside. I think maybe this week, and we talked about this Monday, that maybe this performance by Redman and Dwyer this past Sunday, maybe his focus is going to get back in there a little bit. I would not be surprised if you see Mendenhall turn around this week, get, you know, 18 carries himself, and maybe end up in 80, 90 yard range.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I agree with, you know, what you're talking about with the backs there. You know, again, I think we've beaten this game pretty good here, but again, I think the importance of Brett Kiesel to the defensive line and the defense as a whole can't be kind of overstated at this point. I think he's clearly a force in there, a guy who makes a difference on that line. And then, you know, the overarching takeaway for me is that, you know, this was I just can't call it a pivotal game with the schedule the Steelers had the rest of the year. But I think it was important for level of play to see if this is a good team. And they did step up their play. That's a testament to the guys who did the job and to the coaching. Very solid coaching job. And, you know, expect more of the same this week. I think that's, kind of wraps that game up. I think we've hit it pretty hard. Any other thoughts on the game itself?
Yeah, Cabali has a quick note on this, and we're charting this as well. Only 6 times in 35 dropbacks did Roethlisberger take a 7-step drop, and one of those times he was sacked on one of those 7-step drops. 15 of his 22 first half throws came out of shotgun and basically quick 3-step drops as well. So, the line, I broke down the line, and boy, they graded absolutely fantastic this past week, as you would expect from just a one-time visual of the game. And, they definitely were benefited by the quick passes and all. And I think it's pretty obvious on the game film this week that's what they need to do going forward. It doesn't mean that you have to stop taking the shots downfield and all. And just take what's given you sometime. And as Max Starks gets a little bit more comfortable over there at left tackle, and God forbid if we can stop these injuries and start getting a little cohesion, together in the offensive line, and instead of just starting a different unit every week, I think you'll be able to see him go back to I guess Ben being Ben type situation there. But in the meantime, what you saw the first time through the game watching it live is pretty much the way it comes out when you watch it 15 times.
Yep. And I again, it could, credit to Max Starks for being able to step in there and do what he did. Ramon Foster, you do ask some questions about, why were the Steelers so eager to get past Ramon Foster, who was your starting right guard last year in training camp? I mean, it's almost like he didn't get a shot to win the position this season with all the things that went on, and they settled on, they looked at Hills, they settled on Ligurski, and they try different things. But I think it looks like we're at least going to have some stability, even if it's not this week, whether Gilbert can go. It looks like maybe now stability has come to the offensive line, and that will bring cohesion to the offense. And they have so many playmakers in the skilled positions on offense, as we've talked about all year, that if that offensive line as you said last week on Monday, if they just play well enough, they've proven they can get to a Super Bowl. So, things are looking up. Look forward to this Sunday's game, and we can break down the Jags on Friday and get to our picks. Anything else around the league? I mean, the big news around the league, Mario Williams out for the year. That's a devastating blow for Houston. They just can't seem to turn the corner to get their playoff situation righted. The best player on their defense, one of the best players in the league. That's a big blow for them.
Yeah, and they brought in Thaddeus Gibson for a workout. I haven't heard if he's signed or not, but Thaddeus Gibson is not Mario Williams, in case anybody is curious. And they also traded Derek Mason to him yesterday, with the trade deadline approaching this week and all. So Derek Mason opened his mouth over in New York, and Rex Ryan sent him packing real quick. And, boy, that's quite a let. Derek Mason is not Andre Johnson either, if anybody is curious there. That is a big blow. They're going to have to really lean on that running game going forward, and the pressure, if the Texans, let's face it though, that division's theirs regardless, I think, going forward. I don't think Tennessee's got enough to go after them there, but they could be a division winner and possibly have to play a wild card team. Who knows? Maybe even the Steelers. And it, with Mario, it's a different story with him out of game. One quick note before we throw it to the Vito Stellino interview. I broke down that unnecessary roughness penalty that we talked about the other day. Got some pictures up and all like that. Tomlin mentioned it in his press conference yesterday that he had no idea what was happening on that play there. And, I said I thought originally that Clark hit him out of bounds, Ringer the running back, but that wasn't the case. Ringer was indeed in bounds. Got some great photos up on there. And when you go back and listen to the game, the TV broadcast part of it, you only hear one faint whistle after the false start, and it sounds to be coming from the Steelers sideline type of things. And the refs on the other side of the field have got a great shot of one still holding the whistle in his hand watching the play develop.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I got to say, it was funny. That was some funny stuff in the press conference. Those guys actually asked some good questions this week. And they hit that one on the head, and I like Tomlin's answer. He said, I don't know. They got to do a better job with the – we have to do a better job with the whistle, as in the league has to do a better job. That play shouldn't have happened. Those guys got to blow the whistle, and they got to get the play stopped. That's their job, and they didn't do it. And he said they called the play right after the fact. They called the penalties right because they let it happen, but they got to get the play stopped.
Yeah, and if you think about that play, that was on a 3rd and 7. And if you back him up,
it was a significant play.
It was a significant play, and let's just say, for instance, if the Steelers don't get the stop down there, down in the red zone, and hold them to a field goal, hey, that really changes the complexion of the game there. You know, your defense has already been struggling, you know, through the first 4 games of you know, getting off the field and all like that. You get an opportunity to get the Titans off the field. The refs take it away from you on kind of a bogus play. My apologies to Ryan Clark. I thought initially, first few times through, it was a bonehead play. Until I slowed it down and look at it, but I just want to recap that, being as we talked about it in the last podcast.
Yeah, good stuff. Good point. That was a humorous note, an anecdote out of the press conference. All right. Well, Dave's got an interview with Vito Stellino covering the Jags, and on Friday, of course, we'll come back. We'll break down that game, take a really in-depth look at what's going on with the Jaguars as much as we can, and try to take that seriously. Just like the Steelers better take it seriously. It is on their schedule. So we will have our picks of the week. So we'll throw it to Dave and Vito.
Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. Continuing our stretch of beat writers that we've been able to have every week since the Steelers season has started here, this 2011 season. We continue on with a name that's familiar to Steeler Nation. He's used to write for the local Pittsburgh papers years ago, covered the Steelers during the heyday. He now covers the Jacksonville Jaguars and has for a while. Vito Stellino. Vito, welcome to the Terrible Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. It's our pleasure.
Hi, good to be here.
Vito, first of all, you know, let's give us an idea how, from a health standpoint, how are the Jaguars looking going into this game against the Steelers this week?
Well, they hope to have Aaron Chapman back, who hasn't played all year. He was second torn ACL last year. And missed the first 5 games. The only game he played in was the first was the final exhibition game, and he wasn't ready. Eugene Monroe at left tackle, he had to come up with a shoulder injury. When he goes out, they shuffle a couple positions in the line. And their cornerback, Derek Cox, he's missed a couple games. I have to wait and see whether he'll be back. And their two best special teams players, Montel Owens and Kasim Osgood, have been hurt. Owens is definitely out. Knee injury, Osgood, the hamstring, hopes to come back. So they have some injury issues.
How big of a shot in the arm will it be if Campman comes back this week? I believe Roth has been starting in his place over there at left defensive end. Do you think Campman's going to provide an instant spark there, especially in the pass rush?
Well, wait and see. I would doubt that he'll play more than, say, 15 snaps because it's his first game back. You know, it's just a long layoff. So we just have to wait and see. He's a real team leader. He's well-liked, but he just hasn't been able to get on the field.
The Jaguars' defense has been their, the bright spot, I guess you'd say, to start the season here. They're ranking good in across the league in categories, you know, as far as yards per play and, doing a fairly good job against the rush and the pass. Is that just the Jack Del Rio scheme? Is the defense just playing good cohesively? What have been some of the bright spots on the defense thus far this year?
Well, they're very good against the run. They tackle well. I added Bill Dozny at middle linebacker, but in close session, Dwight Lowry. So they made some nice additions. Actually, it's not Jack Del Rio's scheme. Mel Tucker is now running the defense. Now, the minus is they're playing a very vanilla defense. They say that way they can run fast. But they tend to give up big plays, a touchdown pass on 3rd and 7. 3rd and 17, another touchdown on 3rd and 2 for Cincinnati. They gave up touchdown drive on the first drive. So, overall, they're doing okay. I mean, they stopped from 4 punts like 3 times or 4 times in a row in the start of the second half. But they're still giving up too many big plays, and when you're not scoring much, each big play is magnified.
It's kept them in a bunch of games, especially that run defense. From what I've seen, I've tried to watch a little bit of that game last week against the Bengals to kind of start scouting. Haven't made it all the way through there. On offense, of course, they've got the rookie Blaine Gabbert in there now. And you mentioned the Eugene Monroe injury to start things off there. I think that's going to be pretty big if he's not able to play this week at left tackle. Have they, you know, one thing we've noticed with Maurice Jones-Drew, I mean, he's got a solid, you know, yards per carry to start the year. I think he's averaging like 5 yards per carry. The thing that kind of sticks out to me with his stats, though, is he only has 7 catches out of the backfield thus far. Have they just not done a good job implementing that into the game plan to give Gabbert, you know, a little bit of a safety valve there?
Well, they haven't been able to keep drives alive enough. They don't convert well enough on third down, and when you don't have enough, you don't have as many drives, that limits the amount of throwing you do. So if they were able to sustain more drives, you might get more catches. Also, A.G. Krim has made some nice catches for them as a backup. So and they don't want to overuse him, too. I mean, he's carrying such a big load. So we just have to kind of wait and see.
How has his attitude been? I know I followed quite a bit during the preseason and all when you were on, you know, asking about his injury and all like that. And you've got to be one that he sees coming in that locker room there. But yeah, is he healthy overall? I mean, how is his attitude and all?
Oh, he's fine now. Oh, he's very healthy. Yeah, no, he's made a nice comeback. I said no problems at all with the health. And I mean, he's their key offensive player, no question. No, he's one of the top rushers in the league right now.
I've read up a little bit on that. They utilize that zone blocking scheme as well, implementing it. How is that coming along? You know, the Steelers have had such a problem with teams like the Ravens and the Texans to start the season against that zone blocking scheme. They were able to, make a stand last week against the Titans and played well, minus numerous starters on defense, of course. Is that one thing that we can look for early and often from the Jaguars this week? Are they going to try to run the ball probably to the left side right at Lawrence Timmons and Brett Kiesel?
I would certainly think so. I mean, the run is their bread and butter. That's what they like to do. And Mojo is their best player. So, yeah, no, I would think that you'll see a lot of running. And, you know, Gabbert's still young and experienced, and so I think it adds up to a lot of running.
How is you've watched his progression now? Of course, they cut, you know, David Garrard right before the season started there, went with the other quarterback, just briefly before throwing Gabbert into the fire. What have you noticed? Have you noticed any noticeable improvements in Blaine since taking over the reins there as a starter?
Well, I mean, he's got all the tools. He just needs experience. You know, he can run out of the pocket. Got the big arm. Got accuracy. They think he's going to be a real big time quarterback. But it just takes time. You know, and that's the problem right now. It's during the season, they don't have time, and so. You know, he's going to make rookie mistakes and stuff like that, but they think he's going to be very good.
The Steelers broke out the dime defense last week. Of course, James Harrison's out with the fractured orbital bone. They had to move Lawrence Timmons over to the outside to take care, take his place. They're pulling Larry Foote off the field on obvious passing downs. And when they had the lead last week against Tennessee and put Ryan Mundy on the field and basically had a three-safety, three-corner look on the defense, and that fared well for the Steelers last week. We haven't seen that in some time. It enabled Troy Polamalu to be down in the box a lot during that game and just do what he does best. I suppose that's going to be one of the things that the Jaguars are going to concentrate on during practices. You know, where is Troy Polamalu, and is this a game where Blaine's just going to be kind of over his head, or do you think they're just going to really, really simplify things even more than they have this week on offense?
It's not a question of being over his head. He just has to make plays. You know, I mean, he can read the defense and stuff. It's just you know, sometimes his footwork, stuff like that, you know. He just needs time. He's going to be okay. But, I mean, what I look for Dick LeBeau to do is blitz like crazy. I mean, that's what Quinn Williams did. You get a rookie quarterback, you come all kinds of exotic blitzes, you know. You know, so I think that's going to be it. He's going to, you know, do all of his own blitzing, different kind of blitzes. I think, you know, when you come in a rookie quarterback, you try to confuse him. So I think that's what you'll look for.
They had a change of punters yesterday, I think, and they even brought in Jeremy Kapanos for a workout, who's spent time with the Steelers last year when Daniel Sepulveda went down, and looked like he had a good shot at possibly beating out Sepulveda in training camp, but of course that didn't happen this year. I was surprised that Kapanos didn't win the job, but you know, I guess that had to be done based on what happened last week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he had a 22-yard punt. Now, he blamed the wind, and also they tried to turn Turk into a directional punter, which is not what he is. So it was not a good fit for him here. But he had a 22-yard punt, which set up the winning touchdown for the Bengals. So and he had 7 punts, and the coach said only one of them was good. So, and he dropped the snap in the rain in Carolina, and, you know, so it was time, you know.
With Nick Harris coming in, Tomlin commented on this yesterday during his press conference when he was asked about our return guy, Antonio Brown, who's had a pretty good start of the season. But, you know, Tomlin didn't heap too much praise, saying that he hadn't taken one back to the house yet. And he expects that, you know, it would be no reason for the Jaguars to kick away from him. But, you know, as you mentioned at the top of the show, with the injuries to the special teams unit for the Jaguars, do you expect them to kind of just basically punt away from Antonio Brown?
Well, what they like to do is directional punting. That's their game. So that's what Turk just hits a long down the middle and you run down and cover it. They like directional punting. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's a kick away from him, because that's the way they like their punting game to go.
How has the locker room been to start the season? They got off to a 1-0 start against the Titans and, of course, have lost the last 4 straight. Does Jack Del Rio still have pretty good control of this team right now?
Well, he's under fire. I mean, everybody assumes he's going to be gone at the end of the year. So, but they have a bunch of good guys. The locker room's no problem. They have good chemistry. They, you know, a lot of young players who just want to make their names. So I think that's not a problem. They're not like going to throw in the towel or anything or give up or that type of thing.
Was Jack Del Rio just dealt a bad hand here these last few years? I mean, I've always considered him a pretty good coach. I think, you know, if he does not, you know, make it after this season, I think he's going to surface real quickly on another NFL staff. Is it just a thing that you know, just never could get it over the hump during those winning seasons there?
He's had 9 years. He's the only coach in NFL history had 9 years and did not win a division title. You know, so, I mean, at some point, you got to produce. He's a good assistant coach. He's not head coaching material.
Interesting. Very interesting. You're
he's not a leader, you know.
Oh, I got you. You know, you've been, I want to get, you know, since you've gone from Pittsburgh media and all like that, and you've been around a long time, I've read your work for a long time, even covering the Jaguars. How have you kind of adapted? I kind of asked Ed Bouchette when I had him on to start the season and all like that. How have you adapted to the social media world and the Twitter and all like that? I mean, I see you on there. Was it a hard transition for you, or are you enjoying the social media world?
I'm not really enjoying it, but you know, because there's a lot of irresponsible stuff said on Twitter and that type of thing, but it's part of the media world, so you just kind of go with it, you know. So, but I think, and also 140 characters. What can you say in 140 characters? I don't like it, but it's part of the media world, so you know, you have to live with it.
Yeah. What do you miss about covering the Steelers?
Well, the team I covered is gone forever, so, you know, I don't miss that because there'll never be a team like the 70s Steelers, you know. The Steelers today would get beat by 3 touchdowns by the 70s team, you know. So they had 9 Hall of Famers. It was amazing, you know. So it,
Yeah, without a doubt.
It was like an unbelievable era. I don't know when he was still alive. You know, Dan was still on the team. They were all great guys, the Hall of Famers, you know. They weren't spoiled by the money. It was just a wonderful era. And that winning was important. It wasn't the next contract. It was winning, you know.
Right. You know, Al Davis just passed away just this past week. What type of memories do you have, you know, covering him throughout the years, you know, when he would come to town or whatnot? Do you have interesting stories you can share about your time with Al Davis?
Well, see, they were a huge rival when I was there. And so, I mean, he would often call me to, you know, needle the sealer, that type of thing. So he was great copy. Of course, then he got mad at me when I, you know, said moving from Oakland was not a good idea. So then our relationship wasn't as good anymore. But, yeah, he got caught up too much in his own mistake, you know. I mean, he was a great football guy. But, I mean, they've had won the Super Bowl since 1983. He kind of let the game get away from him. But,
right.
But there's no question about, you know, especially back then when it wasn't a corporate game, it is now. He was one of the sharpest guys going.
Right. Well, Vito, I tell you, we certainly do appreciate your time. Do you have a prediction for us this early in the week, or do we should we send people over to the Florida Times Union and make sure they check up there?
Well, the Jaguars are 2 touchdown underdogs, you know. The Jaguars sometimes do well, but they beat them twice in there, and then all of a sudden, so we'll just see. That's why they play the games.
Right. Well, we appreciate catching up with you, Vito. You can read Vito online at the Florida Times Union. He's also on Twitter at Vito Stellino, I believe. Is that correct, Vito?
Yeah, it's at Jacksonville.com. That's Florida Times Union.
Right, Jacksonville.com. But, hey, Vito, we appreciate your time, taking time with us to preview the Jaguars on the Terrible Podcast, and we hope to have you on again sometime.
Okay, very good.
And thanks to Vito Stellino there from the Florida Times Union, the website Jacksonville.com. You can follow Vito on Twitter, at Vito Stellino. And Dave, great job there. Thanks for doing that. Sorry I couldn't be with you. Dave and I will be back with you Monday or Friday. Make sure you're following. I'm sure if you're listening, you know that Dave's got the greatest Steeler website going on the internet, SteelersDepot.com. And you can follow him on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. You can follow me, at Hammer Speaks. We'll come back at you Friday. Thanks for listening. Feel free, as always, to send us any questions at theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And you can follow the Terrible Podcast on Twitter, at Terrible Podcast. Dave, anything to close?
No, nope, that's got it.
All right. So thanks for listening to episode 29 on season 2. We're coming into 100 here shortly of The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.